If you don't know Louis Anderson from Louis C.K., Charlie Chaplin from Tina Fey, Don Rickles from Nichols and May, if you feel confused and you don't know who to ask, I've got your new favorite podcast. 'Cause they're nerds, nerds about comedy. Justin and Dan, they are uncommonly knowledgeable about S&M. Kids in the Hall and Saved by the Bell. They're nerds, nerds about funny stuff. Stand up and sketch, they just can't get enough. Tell all your friends, go tell your mama she should drop everything. Listen to the Comedy Nerds.
Hello, well, they have a Christmas tree up in front of Macy's, so Merry Christmas, everybody. It's Christmas time
here. Red cups at Starbucks and Yuletide cheer.
Two solid months of Christmas. And then that weird like week after New Year's where people still have all their stuff up and they still have the lights on the house. They turn them on.
You know what? I am cynical.
Okay.
But I like Christmas songs. I enjoy that point of the year when they start playing Christmas songs in stores.
I like a point of the year where they start playing it. And I wish that point was December 1st, possibly.
Yeah.
Maybe even Black Friday.
Yeah.
Black Friday, I think, is acceptable.
Absolutely.
November 1st can go fuck itself as the new It's Christmas Day. Like, I just took off my costume. My mom just checked my fucking Zagnut for spikes.
Yeah.
All right? Let me recover before, you know, here comes Stoozy Snowflake rings in my ears.
That's a Buffalo song. They don't play that song anywhere outside of Buffalo.
That is one of the most respected polkas.
Yeah.
In Lower Cheektowaga, New York. Thank you very much.
I apologize to the people of Lower Cheektowaga.
Hey, real quick, I'm Dan McInerney.
I'm Dusty Denner.
And we are here.
We should have done that,
guys,
sooner.
This is going to be a good one. We're here with our favorite guest that comes on the show.
Well, your favorite guest.
No, ours. I'm saying ours. What are you going to do? Who's better than Mr. Michael Hartney is here
with us?
Hi,
guys. Thanks for having me and for finally confirming that I am your favorite guest. I appreciate it.
You know what? I'm going to do it. I'm going to do my 30-second real quick. If I was king of the world, or when I'm king of the world, what I would do. Number one, move Halloween to the end of September.
All right.
Okay. Because I hate the fact that kids are like walking around, oh, I'm a princess, and I got a jacket on because it's really cold.
Yeah, no, that is awful.
So I'd like
jean
that.
Jean jacket, no less.
I'd like that. And then move Christmas to like the last week in January.
I could not agree more.
Okay, good. Why? Well, I'll tell you why, sound engineer. Two reasons. One, because then, and now ignore the fact that I just moved Halloween. Let's say it's still October. You have Halloween, Thanksgiving, New Year's, and then Christmas, right? Like end of the month, boom, 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 boom. You would make New Year's its own holiday because it wouldn't get wrapped up with Christmas. And so Christmas and New Year's comes, right? And then you still have two long, horrible months of winter left.
Yeah.
Like, if you had something to look forward to, like, oh, it's really cold out, but it's Christmas time. This is going to be great. I hate the fact that Christmas and New Year's, it's like, you know what I mean? It would be great if it could just
separate
it.
What if your birthday was on December 28th? I mean, fuck that.
Yeah, I mean, my brother, his birthday's January 5th. That's not even that close, and he still would always get the double, you know, or the single, I should say, present. Here's the Christmas/birthday present. And it was
thank you.
I felt so bad. My birthday's in August, so.
Anybody
pulling that shit, I'm like, nah, fuck you. That's not going to work.
Yeah, because I feel like now with Christmas, it's like, oh, 3 days of snowfall. Oh, I'm in the Christmas spirit. Oh, Christmas happened. Oh, three more months of this bullshit with no promise of presents?
Exactly.
Fuck this.
So anyway, I was going to say Michael's on the show today. We went to see Conan O'Brien here in New York.
Yep.
We're talking about that. Also, Michael is leaving to go to Los Angeles to do some comedy stuff, which we'll talk about.
Odds are, by the time you're listening to this, he'll be on a jet plane.
Yeah.
To L.A.
And who knows when I'll be back
and
again.
He'll be singing that song.
Who knows?
He already got there.
But if you're listening to this the day before it airs,
It's
Marathon Day. In New York City, the New York City Marathon was today. First off, I'd like to congratulate guests from 2 weeks ago, Dave Warth and Kelly Buttermore, for finishing the marathon.
Nice.
At a time of 5 hours and something.
Sure.
Did they run holding hands the whole time?
They did. They finished within 1 second of each other. It was adorable.
Is that actually true?
Yeah. I don't know if they held hands, but they finished within 1 second.
See, if I was Dave, I'd be like, sorry, lady. I'm going to get my maximum awesome time.
Yeah.
You think Kelly's
dust? Yeah, I like how you think Dave is the one who's going to be taking off.
And I was very...
Kelly's like in a deli getting a Snapple, like just waiting around.
Yeah. I was very impressed with their feet of sports prowess, or whatever you want to call it.
Oh, I thought you meant F-E-E-T.
No. I was impressed
for going
with what
forward.
They were able to accomplish.
Yeah.
And then I read our first news story of the day about Eddie Izzard.
Okay.
Eddie Izzard is got it, coming up in January. He's going to do this. He is going to run 1,000 miles barefoot.
What?
Across Africa.
What?
To Why? Raise money for charity. And I was like,
how is that possible?
He can't do that, until I found out in 2009 he ran 1,100 miles to raise money for charity.
Okay.
He ran, what is it? He ran, I got the note right here. Where is it? Stop being annoying.
There's obviously going to be resting in between, right? Like, isn't that,
yes.
It's not a continuous.
Yes. He ran 43 marathons in 51 days.
What?
He ran 43 marathons in 51 days, and he started training 5 months prior to the event, and he was able to do that.
Did he run the marathons or walk them?
I believe he ran the marathons. But after that, he started learning to run barefoot and says that's the way to do it. So
that is what they say.
Yeah. If you're going to run... Run across Africa.
Who says this? What? People who hate comfort?
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess so. Well, they say that,
I don't get it either.
That human beings, you know, we ran barefoot for thousands of years.
Evolution.
Shoes are kind of a new thing, so that shoes actually kind of fuck up your feet. You should be running.
But so does glass.
Barefoot. Wow. Well,
so does, like, everything on the floor.
All those Coke bottles from the gods must be crazy are still just strewn across the Serengeti.
First of all, Africa is not just straight up desert. Like, it's not.
Yeah.
If you run, like, it's not an oasis of nothing. You know what I mean? Like, there are roads in Africa. It's a whole.
There are
like,
one or two.
Society and people and
it's
things.
It's a continent.
Yeah.
There's various cultures.
Right.
Contained
so,
on
so
this
somewhere
continent.
Along the lines, you're going to run into modern day things like broken glass.
Yeah, I'm
and,
aware.
And tax that people throw in the street because
which happens
because there are evil villains out there who like to throw tax.
But it's Eddie Izzard, so don't you think there will be like some sort of like crushed velvet track?
Yeah,
that will be laid out for him.
A 1,000 mile crushed velvet track that's laid out.
Yeah, it'll be a great visual for the DVD.
Yeah.
That's true. Okay. Yeah. Then very okay. So then I take back everything I said about his 1,000 mile. Run being impressive.
Well, you know why he's doing it barefoot?
I apologize.
Yeah,
he's doing it barefoot because it's so hard to run in high heels.
All right, Dan wins
he
that
dresses
one.
Like a woman for some reason. Okay.
Okay. So yes. So congratulations to Dave and Kelly, but also real congratulations to Eddie Izzard.
He hasn't done anything yet. He hasn't done anything.
He already did the 1,100 mile marathon thing.
Whatever. 1,100 miles. Look, that's a lot.
You haven't even run 43 marathons in any days.
That's true. I don't run any marathons. I drove 1,100 miles once. Does that count?
Yes. Other tragic news.
Oh.
The passing of In the Flow with Avion Crockett.
I don't know. I don't know what any of those words meant.
It was a Fox sketch show that I became aware had begun airing when I read the news item that it was canceled.
Okay. Yeah.
I did see it. I saw 3 of the 6 episodes that aired.
Okay.
Because, you know, we're fans of sketch comedy here.
I am
sketch comedy succeed.
I'm surprised I somehow missed that this thing existed.
Yeah, the reason is it was super awful.
Okay.
Well, it was really bad. Because it all revolved around the fact that Avion Crockett was a very talented man. You guys have never heard of him.
No.
No one's ever heard of him.
Yeah.
And he not
sounds
a very
like a
man.
Brand of bourbon.
Yeah. No, he did, like it. The idea was that he would be a character and he would interact with like celebrities and stuff like that. But 100% of the time, the celebrities were more entertaining than he was.
Mm.
So in a way that made it seem like he was not good at what he did.
Was this like Was this like an Ali G kind of thing, or the celebrities knew what was going on? The
celebrities knew what was going on. It was just a really weak sketch show.
Was it an urban sketch show? Was that
yes,
the flavor they were going for?
But not like...
Not aggressively so?
Right. Like it was
not
meant,
like that Damon Wayans thing that was on Showtime?
Right. Okay. It was meant to have a mass appeal, but it didn't. It had no appeal.
Okay.
So it is, but it was done by the people... by some of the producers of In Living Color. It had a good, you know, whatever.
Pedigree.
That's the word I was thinking of. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But then they were like, hey, let's just do a couple episodes of In Living Color again. And they're like, all right, well, fuck it. Then we don't need the show.
Okay.
We already have that. So,
wow.
Yeah.
Good for them. I'd have more to say about it.
Sorry, sketch comedy. We screwed up again.
If I knew who any of these people were. I mean, let's not pretend like sketch comedy... as a genre is usually not very good. The fact that there is a lot of sketch comedy that we like, but right. You know, there's also like,
well, look, I know
tens of thousands of hours of horrible sketch comedy.
I know that I'm a douchebag. Okay.
Sure.
I know that I am a critical, like a very critical douchebag.
Yeah, absolutely.
But Sound Engineer
was
watching it as well.
With you. Yeah.
And Sound Engineer is much more willing to accept crap than I am.
Yeah.
And she couldn't stand it either.
Yeah.
She was saying to me, like, why is this thing a thing? So if she's saying it, it's bad.
Yeah. In the flow.
Because she, what, you were going to say something, Mr. Hartney?
Just in the flow, man.
Okay.
He's in the flow.
And our final news story of our news section.
Yeah.
Ties into our Conan thing a little bit that Louis C.K. It said on Thursday's episode of Conan, the one from New York, that he will be releasing his next special directly just on his website. You can spend $5 and download it, bypassing all of the major network, bypassing everything.
Yep.
And just saying $5, PayPal, come buy it. Yay.
Yep.
What do you guys think? Is a good idea?
I mean, you know my opinion on trying
on corporate America.
To bypass any corporate gatekeepers possible, so I definitely say hooray for that.
But do you think enough people are going to watch it?
Yes.
When it doesn't really?
Yes, of course it doesn't. He's Louis C.K. People love him, and
right.
Then what, to do something like this doesn't cost that much money. It's just all the other people you have to pay, like that's what makes the price go up. But if you
yeah.
just do this, if you have enough stature to do this and just release it, then you get to keep all of that money.
But do you really, like, he's Louis C.K., means something to you and me, but it doesn't mean something to a lot of people.
Right.
And, like, if he does a special on HBO or he does a special on Showtime or something like that, then there's a certain percentage of the audience who might not have otherwise watched it
mm-hmm.
or known who he was, who just watched it because it was on after the Hurt Locker.
Right.
So now there's no possibility of that.
Yeah.
There's no
discovery for sure.
Right. So my feeling is that part of doing a special like that is a commercial for you, that this no longer is a commercial. Like, that's part of the money that you trade off.
Right.
Is that it's a commercial for you. Because right now, if somebody said, hey, do you guys want to do a special for HBO, and we're going to pay you no money, and you have to even pay your own lunch,
mm-hmm.
we'd be like, fuck yeah, because yeah. it would be such a great commercial for us. We are not Louis C.K., but Louis C.K. is not the biggest thing in the world. He's just the biggest thing for a small subset of people.
Right. Which I think he's happy with, though. Because if he wasn't, he would still be writing on some national, like, late night show instead of having his own TV show, which is difficult and challenging and
right, but
not a lot of people watch
but,
it.
But the difference there is whether or not you can do a sitcom or a weekly show or whatever on a network and get no sort of input.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're only going to be able to pull that off on FX because FX is barely a channel. But for a stand-up special, basically, like, the only rule is, like, don't say pro-Nazi stuff and mean it.
Right.
Like, otherwise, yeah, go nuts. So it's not like he's, you know, he's being restricted by anything. He could do the exact same special anywhere. So, you know, so I think his, like, not worrying about it, you know, like, I think the attitude that brings him to FX is different than the attitude that, you know, he would take into a special.
Well, then let me flip this around on you.
Do it.
Why did he do this?
I think he did it because he could take the risk.
But that's what I mean. He's like, I just want to divorce myself from anyone telling me what to do. I have 100% creative control on this. That's all I'm looking for.
Right. I'm just saying, do you think it's a good idea?
Yes, I do think it's a good idea. And I think the people finding it, like, that happens online, like, differently than it happens on a television, but it happens. You know what I mean? Like,
really? Like, do you really think that many people are going to go to his website and drop $5 accidentally? Or because they, like, you know.
No, but I'm saying, like, someone will post on Facebook this hilarious thing, go here, and then someone will follow that. And yeah, I mean, I can't believe how much people buy stuff online all the time. It's amazing to me when you see the numbers. Not that they're, like, comparable to, like, a network or something, but to be like, wow, that's still, like, a million people did something. To get a million people to head in a direction is
insane. I don't think a million people are going to drop $5 on his website. I mean,
right.
You know, even if he has 200,000 people drop $5 on his website, it's worth it. But
yeah.
I look forward to watching it for free by someone who ripped it
yeah.
the day it comes out.
But that, right. but I mean, that would happen if it was on Showtime.
Sure.
I mean, that, you know.
Right, but he's already paid if it happens on Showtime. He's right. not getting a percentage of the back end on Showtime. He gets his check for X number of dollars, and then he doesn't care how
I
you see
I love
it.
How concerned you are for the well-being and prosperity of a man who is more successful than the three of us will ever be. He'll be fine.
No, I'm sure he will.
He'll be fine.
I'm not saying that he won't be fine. What I'm saying is that I worry, like, I want more people to know who he is. And I worry that this sort of move, the way that he is acting, is going to make it so it's actually, he has a much stronger base of people, but he has a much smaller collection of people.
You're still worrying that he's toiling in obscurity.
Yes.
He is not.
I think he is.
I think he's fine with, I mean, I think he's fine with where he is.
Yeah. And I also think, like, just because someone discovers him doesn't mean they're going to like him. Like, my mother might, like, Louis C.K. special might come on after whatever she's watching on Showtime. She's not going to be like, oh, boy, this guy's great, huh? She's like, no, this guy's horrible and disgusting, and I never watched that. I will turn this off for 2 minutes and then call my son and complain about the kind of stuff that he likes. So, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know. Like, when you're just randomly throwing out, like, to billions of people, 90% of them aren't going to like you. So that's kind of a waste, as opposed to, like, saying, okay, I know the exact kind of people I'm trying to get to. I will market to them.
If Radiohead can sell an album of cats getting fucked to a drum beat and have people buy it, people will buy the Louis C.K. special.
Yeah.
I don't like Radiohead.
I
do not like Radiohead.
Is there a song on that entire album of any kind? Is there a song?
No, they stopped making songs a while ago.
It's like they're just pressing corpses and seeing what gurgles come out.
Yeah, I at some point they were just like, I want it to be uncomfortable for you, and I kind of want you to, if you weren't paying attention, not know when the song ended. And
come here, everybody. I've got this plan. So we're just going to fucking make weird shit. I'm going to dance like a little crazy little girl. And we're going to see how many people we can trick into thinking it's art. I think that's what's going on.
You know what I do have to give him credit for, though? That guy looks less like a Muppet than he used to.
Nope, more.
You think more he looks like more like a Muppet?
Did you see him on Saturday Night Live? I mean, they might as well have sang Manamana.
I did not. I felt he looked. He used to. I felt in his younger days he used to look more Muppety, but
big old Muppet.
Okay.
Well, little teeny Muppet.
All right. So now to get into our episode into our topic of this week, thanks to Mr. Hartney, we were all able to go see Conan Wednesday night of the his third episode in New York, where the guests were
Matthew Broderick
and.
Paul Simon.
Yep.
Also, Will Forte showed up for a bit.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's it.
Yeah.
Andy Richter, maybe.
Yeah. The Basic Cable Band was there, made an appearance.
Yep.
I am relatively confident. I was running it through my brain, and I've seen Conan twice, this being the second time.
Sure.
And I'm pretty sure that Paul Simon was the guest the first time as well.
The first time that you saw it?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I fucking hate Paul
Simon. Why? Come on. You hate Paul Simon?
No, because...
For
Paul
what?
Because I don't mind Paul Simon's existence, but I don't want to hear him play music ever. Like,
okay.
Paul Simon being the musical guest is like there being no musical guest for
what
me.
If, what if, like, Garfunkel was there and they sang Simon and Garfunkel songs?
Yeah, but he wasn't. So... You know,
but you have to acknowledge
what if Frank Sinatra
was
there and he came back to life and they sang Frank Sinatra songs? It didn't happen though. What is so?
I'm just saying, if Paul Simon sang Simon and Garfunkel songs, sans Garfunkel,
yeah,
it'd still be good.
It might, but he doesn't. He just brings a whole bunch of people on stage and there are some drums and they, you know,
some drums,
a lot of drums.
Dustin. Everything you could hit to make a noise was on that stage.
That's true.
Everything.
Right. Let's go back to the beginning, because I think what's happening is, first of all, our perception of the Paul Simon thing is colored by the fact that it took like a good 25 minutes to get his band set up. So we're sitting in the audience waiting for this to happen.
Yeah.
And when Garfunkel and Zombie Frank Sinatra didn't materialize,
it was a little bit of a dip.
It was like, he's just playing a new song off his album.
Of course,
it's what he's going to do because he's on a talk show to promote his album. But
anyway, they set up the broken mellow yellow machine. And just, like, smacked it with, like,
but that guy,
rags.
He played the fuck out of that, though.
Yeah, he
you
did play
really,
the fuck out of that.
You can really hear
Mellow Yellow
the Mellow Yellow Machine coming through. Okay.
There was at least one homeless guy playing music.
So, the show was in...
There was at least one homeless guy on stage. I am sure of it.
He just wandered
wasn't
in.
Wasn't there?
He snuck in, like, the homeless people who were sneaking into Occupy Wall Street.
Right.
Yes.
Nobody noticed.
Because they all kind of looked the same.
That's the thing. Like, you know, as a homeless person, like, once there's more than 50 people in a spot, you can just slip in there. No one's going to notice that you're just standing there.
Especially if, like, three or four people have dreadlocks.
Right. So,
all right. So, you know, let's take our break.
Okay.
Let Mr. Hartley give you some messages.
Sure.
And then we'll come back and we'll actually get into the episode.
All right.
Do you have a question or topic you would like to hear the Comedy Nerds discuss? Send us an email to info@thecomedynerds.com or stop by the site and click Contact Us at the top of the page. We look forward to hearing from you at thecomedynerds.com.
All right, and we're back. So as we were saying, we saw Conan doing his New York show. We saw it on Wednesday. The next day was Louis C.K. and a gay wedding and Jon Stewart and...
Stephen Colbert
showed
Triumph
up.
The insult
Triumph
comic dog.
Did a thing. So, you know, but the show we saw was great.
It was
a ton of fun.
Matthew Broderick.
Ferris Bueller. We were at, it was at the Beacon Theater, which we don't know is a pretty big, nice space.
Gorgeous.
I was thinking probably the only time now, I think we all said saw Conan, right? Did we say that? We were seen him once before?
Yeah. I saw him during the late night show.
Yeah, as did I, and I think Dustin did. This is probably the first time ever that someone went in to see a taping of a TV show and didn't think, wow, this place is so small. Because that's what you always think whenever
you go
into the studio, because it's always like very tiny. But because, of course, there's this huge, beautiful theater. It was interesting to see them doing a show like this to such a giant, cavernous crowd of people. You know what I mean? And it was sort of interesting how they really didn't change the show all that much for it. I mean, it worked fine, but it wasn't like it didn't turn into like a stand-up special, you know?
Right.
It wasn't suddenly like Chris Rock and Bring the Pain or something, you know, like stalking the stage and doing that. It just was basically the show that it was.
There were more video elements, I think, than would have been if it was regular.
Well, they only had the one guest.
Yeah.
So they were filling up that time, which I think is smart. Fill it up with, like, do funny New York videos and, you know, don't have, like, one of the Twilight kids or something come out. But, so, you know, they were trying to make every guest count, I think.
So Matthew Broderick?
I mean, people love Broderick. And he's
like New York.
He's associated with New York because he has so much Broadway stuff. And he's always
But,
here.
Like, Matthew Broderick is over Matthew Broderick. Like, wasn't he? Like, didn't it seem like, didn't even he seem like.
Well, he's always a low-key guy.
Just do things.
He's as bored with himself as we are.
Right, that's what I'm saying.
I'm not that bored with him, though. I like Matthew
Broderick. No, he was actually, he was charming, but there's certainly like a very, he's definitely low energy.
Yeah, that's what I mean. He's a low-key guy, but, you know, I don't know.
Okay.
I think, like, he's the kind of guy who I really respect only because he's like, oh, here's a thing that I like to do, like Broadway stuff, and I'm just going to do that. And I don't really care about the fact, I'm assuming, I don't know him personally, but I don't really care about the fact that, like, I don't really have much of a movie career because I like doing this. And then I'll just show up, like, in the Strangers with Candy movie for a scene and be awesome. You know what I mean? Like, I love when people just, like, Bill Murray it. I'm just like, no, I'll just start showing up random places and not really care that much. I have more money than I know what to do with, and I'm just going to enjoy my life and not be like, you know, an Eddie Murphy doing, like, Dr. Dolittle 2. It's like, dude, you have enough money. You're famous. Just be happy with that. Like, why do you have to,
except
you know,
he was there because of a movie that he did with Eddie Murphy.
Right, but that's what I'm, well, that's what I'm, so, you know, I was hoping,
it, pointing out.
I was hoping, well, I know, I mean, I understand that, but I'm just saying that, you know, it's not like he's not the star of the movie, and he's not like out there, you know, oh, I gotta be in a movie every 6 months or whatever.
Yeah. So for those of you that haven't been to a taping, everything starts out with a warm-up comedian coming out, and basically, they're not really supposed to do material, per se. They just riff with the crowd, so the crowd gets into it, which is so weird, because the whole point, the whole thing that a warm-up comedian does is get the audience to talk to him, and then they, as soon as that's done, they're like, no, don't do that anymore.
Stop talking.
Yeah, that thing that was killing right now, don't ever do that again.
Well, but I think the idea is to maybe get that out a little bit. I mean, I've seen other TV show tapings where a comic does just come out and do, like, 10 minutes of prepared material. I think on a higher level like this, you know, they will just do crowd work. And I mean, I would go so far as to say I think Jimmy Pardo is the guy who does it for Conan, probably the best in the business for that particular style of, you know, of just riffing off the crowd or whatever. But yeah, I mean, I think that's sort of the, to kind of get that out a little bit, to let people like yell out stuff. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, a warm-up comic feels like a holdover. We were talking about, like, a lot of stuff from, like, a talk show.
Yeah.
Feels like a holdover from, like, the 60s that they probably don't really need to do anymore, but they just, it's sort of traditional. Like, the band just plays, like, where the commercial break would go. The band just plays, like, a three-minute song, which, at the time, before, you know, when you didn't want to do a whole lot of editing, if you were filming something like in the 60s, that made sense to just leave a gap.
Yeah.
It doesn't really make sense anymore. There's really no reason
you're
to do that.
You're stop on the tape and moving on.
Yeah, except for the fact that it's just sort of the way it's always been done.
Yeah.
But I'm sorry, I'm still talking.
No, it's fine.
Yeah.
No,
so, I mean,
I agree.
Jimmy Pardo comes out. He's great.
Jimmy Pardo destroyed. It was so fucking funny.
And what a hard thing to do, because that's a completely different animal than doing it like in a studio where the acoustics are great, you know, the there's a, like a much smaller crowd. You can see everyone. He's just doing it to this gigantic
crowd work in a room that's
crushed.
Yeah.
Can you imagine the rush you must get to crush in front of that many people? I mean, the Beacon Theater is huge.
Yeah.
There were like three tiers of balcony. Three.
Well, that's that was the thing that stuck out to me as I was leaving, was there that thing of like the show's done by 7:30. Your night is done by 7:30. And it is, odds are, the coolest thing you're going to do that night. Like, if you're warming up Conan, like, that's your night. Whatever you're doing after that seems like it's... just go to bed. You know what I mean? Like, and... Because what are you going to do after that? Like, I'm going to go get food, but, like, but I was on stage at the Beacon, like... you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I totally...
Like,
yeah.
Like, I feel like anytime you do a show to a decent crowd... go home.
Like, fair enough.
Like, either go to a bar and with people from that show and have sex with them.
Yeah, I was gonna
say, or go home.
Yeah.
Like, those are your two choices.
Right.
But like, going out and meeting friends for, you know, like a burger. Like, fuck that. No, just go home.
Yeah.
Depends on the burger,
right?
True. And if you're, you know, if you're in New York City, sparingly, but. My point is that, whatever. There was a rush, and then it's gone. Okay? Fuck you guys.
Well, that's why people do crazy amounts of drugs.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
They would just, like, Jimmy Pardo probably just, like, went to his hotel room, threw a couple of needles in him, and just like swirled.
What's swirling?
I don't know. I just feel like his reality like swirled. Like,
okay, I thought that was like a drug
spirals.
Term. I didn't know.
It might be.
Maybe I mean, it probably is.
Maybe like that's when you take G. People say they're swirling. Maybe.
What's G? What in the hell is G?
Like the date rape drug.
Oh. Okay.
Guys.
You're part of some other like subculture that we're not part of.
No, yeah. I was about to say, oh my God, is it, I'm officially old because I don't know what you're talking about. But I actually have heard it. I don't like, I would never think to recreationally take a date rape drug.
I
but
too
sure.
would never recreationally.
Shut up.
Do much of anything because that
so...
word does not exist.
So anyway,
son of a, you know, I got through that word twice, and then I was just like, I don't know how to end this. I don't know how to end this word.
Maybe the third time will be the charm, but I won't try.
And then there was the old like, well, I'll just kind of stumble through it and just keep going, and maybe no one will notice that I can't seem to quite figure out how to end that word. Anyway, okay, so Pardo comes out, he's great. I guess before or after that, I don't remember the band. Plays a couple of songs,
yeah,
which is fun to see. Andy comes out, says a little, hey, what's up, how you doing? And the show kind of starts like pretty quick. Like that's the funny thing too, like because it wasn't like a show, it was a taping, so it was just sort of like, you know, then Conan just comes out and the show just starts. And you know,
I know that you guys are not going to get this reference,
okay,
but fuck you,
do it. Is it about G?
No.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, it's not an obscure reference, but it's just you guys won't care.
Yeah.
To me, it felt like the beginning of, like, a hockey game.
Okay.
Because the beginning of a hockey game is so unceremonious. Like, they just eventually go to the middle of the ice, and they drop the puck, and then the game starts. And 9 times out of 10, you're like, oh, wait, did the game just start?
Right.
Like, I was in the middle of a conversation. I didn't know what was happening. Like, unlike baseball, when, like, that first pitch, like, you know that it's there. Or the kickoff.
It's a big setup.
Yeah. It just happens. And that's what the taping felt like. All of a sudden, you're like, oh, I guess you're... I guess it's a thing now. Because Andy did just sort of walk out, and he's like, hey. And then all of a sudden he's announcing, like, you know, tonight, Matthew Broderick and whatever. Then he does his little joke of what the title of the episode is, and then he's pretty much good for the rest of the night. Like, I realize, especially in that venue, what a sweet gig he has. He says 3 funny things, and he's out. That's all he has to do.
And he said what possibly were the 3 funniest lines of the evening.
Yes.
So it's got to be great
to
just pick those moments and just kill it.
Right. Yeah. But you got to be good, though.
I'm not like, saying Andy Richter has an easy job.
Right.
I'm just saying, like, it's a sweet job because
you
pick the moment.
Right.
Yeah. It's if up to you.
Yeah. If you got something, say it. If you don't.
Don't.
Right, I know what you're saying. Like, Conan always has to be. Like, he could just sit. Andy could just sit there and not say anything, and no one would really question it.
Right.
Like, he's just waiting for, oh, now I have something hilarious, so I'm going to.
There's probably days where Richard's just like, I got nothing. Shit, don't even pan over to me, camera.
And the thing is, because of that, he can just kill with, like, yep. Like, if Conan says something, he can just be like, uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
And then just move on, and it will kill. Oh, I want that job.
But not everyone could do that job, because guess who also could do that, or does that? Paul Schaefer.
That's true. And he does not.
Kevin Eubanks used to do that. Yeah. No, those guys don't kill.
No. But they weren't intended
Richter to. Special.
They weren't intended to, though.
Yeah, I mean, they're the band leader. They're not quite the sidekick.
Paul
Schaefer is the most confusing man I've ever heard of. Well, because he's involved in all sorts of weird shit that he shouldn't, like...
He was, like, a kind of a cast member on Saturday Night Live. I mean, what a weird world.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he wrote It's Raining Men, so also know that.
He did?
Yes, Paul Schaefer wrote It's Raining Men.
Hallelujah.
We need to see a documentary on Paul Schaefer, because I don't feel... Like, there are too many open holes in his resume that I don't fully understand for me to be able to do an accurate thing. Whereas Kevin Eubanks is just like... Don't try and say funny things.
Also, the first guy to say fucked on Saturday Night Live, or say the word fuck.
Really?
Yep. Yeah, it was supposed to be, they were supposed to saying flogged. That was the joke. It was a medieval thing, and he slipped and said fucked. And so first guy to ever curse.
Okay.
Or say the word fuck, at least, on Saturday Night Live. Then after that, I mean, Conan comes out. He's awesome. Does some
monologue's funny.
Monologue's
he does
good.
The string thing
happens. Sure.
Mm-hmm.
And then they show some video pieces. It was the basketball thing. Was that the first one?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Very funny.
Yeah, it's a misdirect. He's you know, there's a very famous street court in New York that Conan goes to, and you think you're going to see this remote piece about him being terrible at basketball. And the very first play, he gets injured and taken to the hospital. So right. We see all of these things.
What was great? Yeah. What was great about that, and what I appreciated, was they went to the trouble of he like falls down and basically like skins his knee. And then it smash cuts to him on a stretcher, like in a neck brace, being put in an ambulance. Like,
with an oxygen mask.
With no explanation of like how he got that hurt. Like all we saw was him fall on his knee, and yet somehow he's like in traction getting into the, or being put in the back of an ambulance. So that was great.
Which again, for me, because I always go to the production aspects of stuff, I was like, you got an ambulance, you got people in costumes, you got a hospital room, you got an IV, you got a, like... God damn, that, like a lot of effort went into making that thing work.
And I've heard Conan talk about how like he was a huge SCTV fan, and he said one of the things he appreciated about SCTV was it would start somewhere and you would think you know where it was going, and then all of a sudden it would shoot off in a weird direction and into something that took clearly a lot of effort to do. Like all of a sudden like guest stars are showing up and stuff. And he's like, That's what I want to do. That's what I love, and that's what I want to do in the show. For you to not only laugh and be like, wow, they went through the trouble of like, you know, getting like Mayor Bloomberg or whatever to show up for this 2 second part. And then, you know,
do you think, because when I think of that, I think of The Simpsons, because The Simpsons have been all into it. Do you think he brought that to The Simpsons, or do you think that's something that The Simpsons shared?
I mean,
that sort of viewpoint.
I mean, I don't think he brought it to them, but I'm sure that they probably recognized it in him. You know what I mean?
Okay.
That the people who are going to go the extra mile for it.
I think possibly something organic there happened with that. Because it was definitely around his season where it started to not be as clean. Like
Where they'd start one place.
It would start in one place, like, and you knew the episode was about this. Because, I mean, starting when he came on, the first few minutes you'd think it would be about, like, this award show that they're at, and then it would jump to something else, and then maybe even jump to something else. Like usually they don't even get to the thing until like act two.
Weird.
Yeah,
I mean, they talked about how they sort of stumbled into that it wasn't intentional, but at some point
it could have been.
Well, no, I know that, but they just said like also at some point the writers sort of realized like, oh, act one never has anything to do with anything that happens in the rest of the episode. It's just like a chance to make as many jokes as humanly possible about something, and then one little twist will happen.
We're going to attribute it to Conan O'Brien.
Yeah.
So, there you go, Wikipedia.
Put that
Here's
in there.
Here's your source. The Comedy Nerds, episode...
182.
Yep.
Wow.
We should call this episode Blink. Right, guys?
Why would we do that?
Blink 182.
Oh.
It wasn't good.
That's true. That's good. Because we did call episode 41 some.
Yeah.
So... It only makes sense.
I was like, oh, you guys did? And then I realized that you didn't.
So then they did the pizza video.
Uh-huh.
Funny. He sang Tula Lura, whatever you say.
He went to a New York pizzeria and sort of shadowed them and learned how to make pizza.
Yeah.
And was a typical Conan about it.
Very funny. And then...
Although it was tragic because they talked about Ray's and original Ray's and whatever.
Famous Ray's.
Yeah. But I think original Ray's shut down.
Oh.
One of the original Ray's kind of deals.
There's like seven original Ray's.
Yeah. Shut down. They closed their doors.
That's too bad.
So.
It was not the
original. It wasn't factually accurate, I guess is what I'm saying.
Right.
There's like 16 original Ray's.
Yeah.
No, I know. But I mean, one of the ones that's considered like one of the
Ray's.
Like the original Ray's kind of deals. Shut their doors after like 81 years or some bullshit.
Wow.
Like
that. That's too bad.
I don't know all the details.
So
I
there's
just know.
One fewer place in New York that sells terrible pizza.
Yes.
What a bummer.
So and then was there anything else? Then
there was Ted Turner.
Oh, right. Thank you. Yeah. So Will Forte comes out as Ted Turner. Funny.
I'm pretty sure in the shot that ended up being in the show, you could see the cue card in the corner being flipped. And then probably 30 seconds into it, they like moved it over a little bit, but I was definitely like, guys, come on. Cue cards in the shot, guys. I don't know anything about this shit. I know that shouldn't be there.
I mean, that just must be such a tough thing to figure out like where the cue card guy is going to be, because that theater's not set up for like,
yeah,
you know,
for
doing,
live taping,
doing a taping, yeah, or whatever. But yeah, I mean, you know, we were talking about, it's so funny how, I mean, this is nothing, it just feels traditional. It's like 2011 and the guy still has the giant card with the, you know, written out in hand.
In marker. Yeah. It's, yeah, it looks like the same guy is writing on all the cue cards everywhere.
Yeah.
It's possible. I mean, not possible, but I mean, like, they probably want, like, a certain style.
Look, yeah.
Like, you can't be, like, yeah, writing in cursive, like,
that's true.
On there.
I did think that I dotted with a heart was weird.
But it's also funny, too, like, because I could read the cue cards from where we're sitting. And
fuck
it's just,
you.
And it, nope, that's not what I meant. But it's also just funny where it's, like, you know, the lines are, like, written out, and then it just says, like, Conan looks confused, like, in a box. Like, just every single thing that's going to happen is, yeah, like, written out on the cue cards.
I'm surprised that at this point they haven't just, like, invented the cue card printer and just sold, right, it to networks and just been like, here's a printer for a big piece of paper that, right, will just, like,
but
you
see,
know,
but
like
see,
at this
I
point.
Think, but I will say this. I think what it probably is that a guy writing on a big piece of paper can never break. You know what I mean? Like a teleprompter or like, because sometimes they're writing up to the minute before the show starts. So anything technological could break. And yeah, the guy writing out on a piece of paper is going to take longer than a technical solution, but it's also always going to take the same amount of time every time.
It's also probably a union job.
Yeah, it's also, I'm sure, a union thing. But
so I'm sure the big piece of printer company, yeah, has been like muscled into the corner by Teamsters and said,
you don't
exist.
You got a nice company here. It'd be a shame if it burned down.
What people forget about the cue card holder position,
yeah,
is that there's cue card holder and then there's his sidekick, cue card grabber.
Mm. When they're finished?
Yeah. As he's pulling the card down, he's handing it to somebody else.
Did you also see the rhythm? I mean, there's such an art to it.
Yeah.
Because you really have to have the rhythm down of how the person is speaking. And I mean, I was very impressed.
So we need to know how much cue card holder and cue card grabber make.
How do you get that job? Like, that's one thing that always, like,
my friend knows, because he's had the same cue card guy forever.
Yeah.
And my friend Doug knows him and his family.
But how do you fall into that job? Is that something you
walk into one of those offices and you're like, hey, pretty nice office you got here.
Yeah, okay.
Be a shame if something happened to one.
Yeah.
Oh, what are these cards? Mm. Look at this shit.
Yeah. Look what I can do here.
Right now I'm miming the turning of cards.
All right, so Wikipedia, again, there's cue card job is all mop ties.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
But that is a fun fact.
Be like, hey, you got a nice office here. Be a shame if you didn't know what to say at some point.
If you were going to ad-lib, it might be nice if there was room allotted for it on the card.
Because a couple times it would say, like, will ad-lib.
Yeah.
Conan ad-lib.
So then Broderick comes out, does a thing. We saw a clip from the movie, which I was kind of hoping... It sounds like it's not that good, unfortunately.
No, it's not that good.
And I was only hoping it was good because, I don't know if you agree, Michael, I'd love to have Eddie Murphy back. Wouldn't you love to have him back?
I would, because he was engaging in the clip, I thought.
Yeah, I mean, apparently he's really good in it. It's just the movie itself is not,
I mean,
great. Well, you know.
Have you seen a good Brett Ratner movie?
No, but that guy is also
Shanghai Nights.
But here's what we were debating.
He probably didn't make that. I don't know.
Here's what we were debating the other day.
Yeah.
And I don't know why we're getting off on the Eddie Murphy thing, but let's do it. Now, ignoring SNL Eddie Murphy.
Sure.
And ignoring stand-up Eddie Murphy.
Yeah.
Okay, because we're all going to agree that that was phenomenal.
Absolutely.
There's no question about that. Do you think that actor Eddie Murphy, that we appreciate him nostalgically, or do you think that he can legitimately be a very entertaining movie actor?
Couldn't he be? He once was,
right? But I guess what I'm saying is, like, when you look back and like
if you take
Beverly
away
Hills
SNL,
Cop, it was Beverly Hills Cop really good or was it nostalgically good?
No, Beverly Hills Cop is great. Beverly Hills Cop is great,
but Trading Places is great.
Trading Places is great. I think Beverly Hills Cop. It's
Coming to America. I mean,
Coming to America.
Coming to America.
Beverly Hills Cop is a little dated now, I think, but I think he's great in it. I think maybe the movie around him didn't age as well, but I think he's great in it. Trading Places is great. Coming to America is great. 48 Hours is great. That's a good movie. And it's kind of even more dramatic-y than the other stuff. It's funny, but it's also a little serious.
Dramatic-y.
There's a word.
Recreation.
Are you saying Scrabble?
But yeah, no. I mean, can he be now? I don't know. But he definitely was at one point.
Because he's got the timing. Like, if you just look at Shrek, mm-hmm. he's got the timing.
Yeah.
He's got the inflection. He can do it. It's just a question of, can he do it when you see him?
I don't know.
I think he can do it. I think the movies he's in can't do it.
Yeah. We were saying,
does that make sense?
He needs a Lost in Translation.
Sure.
But...
yeah.
And you, you think he'd be able to
Dream
get one.
Girls was supposed to be his Lost in Translation. And he is very good in it.
Yeah.
But nobody cared.
Well, he was as nominated for an Oscar and didn't win as Bill Murray was nominated for an Oscar and didn't win. So
right, but I feel like it brought Bill Murray back more so than...
yeah, but I also...
as somebody who you'd want to be in things, more so than it brought Eddie Murphy back as somebody who you'd want to be in things. Not that he hasn't had a career. He's always been in something.
Right.
But it's just a question of if you want him to be in your good movie or you want him to be in your movie.
It didn't have... I will admit it didn't have the impact that like a Rushmore had for Bill Murray.
Yeah.
But I mean, Bill Murray also made Bill Murray. I mean, like what I was just talking about, like he could have made Rushmore and then turned around and started in, like, you know, The Man Who Knew Too Little too. Like he was just like, no, this is what I'm doing now.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know? That man has integrity.
Yeah.
As evidenced when he was in Garfield 2, A Tale of Two Kitties.
Everyone always brings that up.
Because it's awesome. Anyway, so what? We're almost out of time, but what surprised you about the taping? What happened that you didn't expect?
I was gonna say the funniest thing is like nothing in particular. Like maybe tiny little things, but for the most part, I was like, yeah, that was a. I've seen many filmings of TV shows, and that's how they go. So yeah. There wasn't anything that was so crazy. It's really worth noting. I didn't think. Was there anything for you that?
I wasn't aware of the Ted Turner character because I don't watch Conan's TBS show regularly. But I was very happy to see Will Forte in the flesh.
Yeah,
that was exciting.
What I appreciated, and again, maybe it is a callback to earlier times, or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact that they kept going and they didn't break, and there was only those 2 minute breaks in between, showed. Because it's easier for them to break. Honestly, it's
right.
You know, it's easier for them to take long bits of time and discuss things and whatever. Their commitment to making it good for the audience surprised me. Like, I was impressed that they were so committed to really keeping it going. And if you watch Conan the whole time, like, he's constantly moving and trying to bring energy and making sure that he's, you know, he's there and excited about it. And... 16 fucking years in, man, he could start phoning it in if he wants, you know.
Yeah,
what I mean.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
He doesn't have to be there and excited the whole time, and he does, and that's a good commitment to his craft. And not that I'm saying I'm surprised that he's committed to his craft, but he was more than I thought he was.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I almost kind of wonder too if it's like, if they do sort of put, I mean, they broke it because, like we said, for the Paul Simon thing, like, the band was playing, and then they stopped, and they just started pumping music into the house, and they were clearly, like, getting this whole giant thing set up. But I also wonder, too, if it's, like, if they do it that way, if they don't break, because then they could stop and be like, was that good? Was it not good? As opposed to, like, it is what it is, and we have to keep going. You know what I mean? Like, you could probably start to start chasing your tail in that situation, to being like, well, maybe we should change this word, and maybe we should change that word. And it's like, no, this is the show, and good or bad, we're just going to do it. You know what I mean? Like, to not, like, because if you were making, like, a sitcom or you know, or a movie, it's like, well, we have months to figure this out.
Yeah.
But they don't. They don't have time
to be fussy.
And then, yeah, and the next day, you just sleep quite clean, and you have to start all over again. So you know that you're not always going to knock it out of the park. Like, that's just... you're not going to hit home run every time you go up to bat. You just have to be happy with the fact that sometimes you hit a single and sometimes you strike out, but they'll be next time, you know? So, yeah, I mean, I don't know if anyone's ever thought about it in those terms. But that also seems like a good thing to be like, just put that restriction on yourself.
Yeah.
We got 2 minutes while this song is playing to figure out if we want to change something for the next segment, or otherwise we just do what it is.
Yeah.
And we just live with it, you know, because it's a marathon. It's not a sprint.
You got a smile on your face, Mr. Hartney. What are you thinking?
About dreams. the dreams of children.
Speaking of dreams, I know we're late, but we never did touch on your leaving New York City. Do you want to just briefly talk about? I know you. It's sort of a weird thing because you're not entirely sure what you're walking into, right? I mean, you know what it is.
To a degree, I am. I was cast in a showcase that CBS produces. It's a sketch comedy show that is performed in January.
Can we get that woodpecker out here?
I'm flying out to LA to start working on the show, and it's basically going to be a macro version of what I've been doing for 2.5 years at UCB at Mod Night, which is just pitching sketches, writing sketches, rewriting, you know, trying to push for your character and trying to sort of fit into an ensemble, and hopefully cool stuff will come out of it.
Right. It would be good to know if you could report back, because the idea of Mod Night is to be like almost like an internship, like you're pretending to
be professional. This thing.
Yeah. It'd be interesting to know if that does translate, if you come back like, wow, I'm really glad I did that, because it's exactly what it was.
They killed me. Yeah. they didn't tolerate any of my behavior.
So
look at my black eye. Don't do any of those things in the real world.
It's all a lie.
They're all terrible. I extended my hand for someone to shake it, and they flipped me over karate style.
No one mentioned fruit baskets. Apparently, you're supposed to bring fruit baskets.
It's all fruit baskets and Jamba Juice.
So, well, that's great. So you're going out there, and so you're gonna take Hollywood by storm, put it in your back pocket.
I hope so.
Run.
I would also like to live in New York, so we'll see how. We'll see how this all shakes out.
You'll be spending a lot of time. If it does all work out, you're spending a lot of time on planes. So get ready for that. That's what, from what I understand.
I get a lot of work done on planes. I'm actually fine with it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I get like writing done on planes.
I plan a lot of work for planes.
Yeah.
And then I do none of it. Oh, I Zero. Usually am pretty good about getting all of it done.
Okay.
I feel like once it becomes like a regular thing in your life, it probably is easier.
Yeah.
Like it's still a little too new and exciting. Not exciting, but it's a little too like outside of my norm that like I can't quite figure out how to do it, but I'm getting better at it, because I used to be able to also not really, like, I would get really bored, and on this last trip back from LA, I was sort of like, "Oh, we're back in New York already?" I was watching a movie and wasn't really paying that much attention, and that has never happened to me before, so.
And we will continue this conversation off the air and say,
"Why?"
No, because I feel like for our listening audience at home, our travel habits perhaps are not as relevant.
Dustin, I'll say this, though.
This shit is riveting, son.
A, it's riveting. And B, have you ever listened to a podcast done by a comedian? Because 80% of it is, this airport's like this, and I had to travel to this place, and there was someone on the plane I didn't like. Like, most of podcasting pretty much is that.
I love Mark Maron, but he talks about some shit, man.
Yeah.
Right.
That has nothing to do with comedy.
But do you like it when he's doing that?
Yeah. I do.
Okay. I think people like the inside stuff. That's never mind. Let's not talk about this now.
Guys, let's talk about window treatments for this room. The audience can get into that, right?
Come on.
Yeah.
I'm feeling like a balloon valance in the corner. No?
Just no, something. No, that would be fine.
Yeah.
The thing that's there right now was there when we moved in. So it's, that's why it's there.
Oh, good. That's good.
Yeah. That whole window treatment, has not moved.
I was thinking for a window treatment, you could maybe get like, I don't know, like an In the Flow with Davian Crockett.
Davian Crockett.
Was that it?
It's Avian.
Oh, Avian Crockett, sorry.
I like how I he's like a black version of an old folk hero. Paul Kwanda Bunyan. Am I right, guys?
You know. Davian Crockett.
Davian Crockett, I'm obsessed.
although it's like, no, come on, it's Avian, stupid.
Yeah, moron.
It's the much more common name. Avian.
Everyone knows that.
Guys, let's just all agree that the greatest folk hero is Jamiroquai Appleseed. All right? And be done with it.
Oh. Anyway. All right. Well, thank you guys so much for listening. Michael, yeah. Is there anything you need to plug or tell the audience at home?
I'm going to Los Angeles.
Okay.
Yeah, so
I'll tell you more later.
If you're out in Los Angeles, just scream Michael Hartney.
Go to the top of the O in the Hollywood sign and just scream. Because that provides the best acoustics.
There's three O's, though. Is there one in particular?
The easternmost O.
Okay.
All right, well, thank you guys for listening.
I think it runs north to south, though.
It doesn't.
No, I know. Big word.
As I try and wrap this up, show.
Thank you for listening. Okay, so Michael, thank you for being on the show.
Guys, let's talk about like paint colors for this new room to go with our balloon balance. No, should we stop? All right.
What is a balloon balance?
It's like
okay. So I'm Dan McInerney.
I'm Dusty.
Thank you guys so much for listening. Michael, thanks for being on the show. And
thanks for having me.
We're gonna miss you horribly and come back soon.
I will.
All right. We'll talk to you guys next week. Goodbye. You've been listening to The Comedy Nerds. If you have any questions or comments, please email us at info@thecomedynerds.com. Check out our website at thecomedynerds.com where you can comment on any past episodes. And if you enjoyed this show, please write a review in iTunes and tell the world how awesome we are. For Dustin and myself, thank you for listening.